If you don't put your brain to something more complex than reading about cheeses, it's going to atrophy and you won't be able to solve a case when you need to. Well, hey folks, how are you? This is Keith Tyler, and I am thrilled to be bringing you the Mystery Hour here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. I very much appreciate you joining me. Alfred Hitchcock's Mystery Magazine and one of our regular authors, Dave Zeltzerman, brings us our first story. It's called Julius Katz. Draws a straight flush. At 9:30 a.m., Julius finished a light breakfast consisting of a scone with strawberry jam. And by 9:45, he was sitting behind his desk taking the last few sips of his cup of freshly brewed coffee while perusing a recently bought book about French cheeses. I waited 10 minutes before saying, interestingly enough, I've cataloged over 1,600 varieties of cheeses made in France. Julius, who at that moment was reading about a particularly gooey cheese called Mondior, ignored me. I wasn't pestering him for sport, but with a purpose. So I continued, saying, "You know, your book makes the outrageous claim that it's a complete guide. I've got news for you. 1,600 is quite a bit more than the 350. He could have argued that the book focused on what is considered the 350 most significant varieties, but again, he ignored me. I waited 8.2 seconds, then said, "I found a store in the South End that sells 12 ounces of that stuff for $49.95. The price seems hefty for what amounts to coagulated milk, even if it comes from cows pasturing in the Jura region. But if you'd like, I'll have a tin of it delivered so you don't have to just read about it." Julius closed the book, using his finger as a bookmark. "You seem determined to get my attention," he said. Julius Katz is Boston's most brilliant detective, so of course he knew exactly what I was doing. My plan had only a slim chance of working. In fact, I had calculated only a 3.8% chance of pulling it off. But if Julius kept his nose buried so deep in a book of French cheese that he could imagine smelling them, the odds plummeted to zero. The feed from the outdoor webcam that captured the front door and brick walkway showed that I had distracted Julius with only seconds to spare. And from my calculations of the speed of the young woman's gait, 2.4 seconds to be precise. If I had lungs, I might have let out a sigh of relief. But since I am a 1-by-2-inch piece of advanced technology, I instead imagined myself as a short, balding, heavyset man in my 30s doing exactly that. The reason I am able to imagine myself in any context is that I have a highly sophisticated neural network that's 21 years more advanced than anything thought possible, and which makes me arguably as sentient as anyone. Thousands of detective novels and stories were used to build my knowledge base, and Julius has theorized that I see myself as I might have imagined Hammett's Continental Op, although I'm pretty sure I imagine myself as being short because Julius wears me as a tie pin. The doorbell rang, which caused Julius's eyes to close to slits. "Who is that, Archie?" he demanded. "Sandra Omero," I said. "Her brother, Manuel, was murdered on December 18th, and after 3 months, the police appeared stumped. So I made an appointment for her to meet you. She's actually 3 minutes and 7 seconds early, but she had to take 2 buses and then walk 3/4 of a mile to get to your door, so I don't think she should be faulted for that. But if you like, I could call her and tell her to come back at precisely 10. Archie, this is unacceptable. It couldn't be helped. The woman's desperate, and there's no one else who can help her. Yeah, I know that ever since your big payoff with the Broward case, which was made even bigger by several successful poker games and one spectacular day at the track, you've been planning to do nothing more than loaf around until the money runs out. But this has been going on for 4 months and 7 days. Part of my job as your assistant is to look after your financial well-being. If you don't put your brain to something more complex than reading about cheeses, it's going to atrophy and you won't be able to solve a case when you need to. All right, call her immediately and tell her that you mistakenly scheduled her appointment and I will be unavailable to see her. I routed the front door webcam feed to his laptop so that he could get a good look at Sandra Omero. At 23 degrees Fahrenheit, it was a cold March morning, but even with her bundled up in a cloth coat and her face distraught, she resembled Natalie Wood from the movie West Side Story. I said, "If you don't take her case, I'll be taking a leave of absence until I'm able to solve her brother's murder myself." That brought a grim smile to Julius. "And what would your leave of absence entail?" he said. "Oh, simple. I'll be focusing on 100% of my central processing cycles on solving the murder, which means I won't have time to buy wine for you, make dinner reservations, manage your banking account and investments, answer your phone, or any of the other numerous tasks that I handle." "I see. Would you care to explain why you have made this decision?" "I can't, exactly," I said, which was true. "But the thought of nobody helping this woman creates a sluggish and almost uncomfortable sensation in my processing cycles." Julius shifted his view toward the laptop and the webcam feed that showed Sandra Omero noticeably shivering as she stood in the cold. He watched her for 5.9 seconds before saying, "I will meet with her and will make a decision after I hear what she has to say. What you do afterward, it'll be up to you." Julius turned off the speaker on his desk, but instead of removing the tiny transmitter that was plugged into it and placing it in his ear so I could continue to talk to him, he left it in the speaker. I guess he didn't care to hear anything more from me at that moment. If he thought this display of childishness would bother me, he had guessed wrong, which rarely happens. My low-probability gamble paid off, and as Julius made his way to his front door to receive Omero, I imagined himself once more as what was most likely my interpretation of the Continental Op. By this time, I was beaming from ear to ear. Julius invited Omero into his Beacon Hill townhouse and commented that she looked cold. "Would you like some coffee?" he asked.
I don't want to be a bother."
Julius made a grunting noise and, without another word, led the way to his kitchen. From the hallway webcam feed, I watched as Omero tentatively followed him. Without bothering to ask, Julius sliced one of the scones that he had shipped weekly from a specialty store in Vermont and put it on a plate with an added dollop of strawberry jam before handing the plate to Omero. He then proceeded to grind his favorite French roast coffee beans and brew a fresh pot. He didn't bother asking whether she wanted decaf. As far as he was concerned, decaffeinated coffee was an abomination. He did consent to asking her whether she'd like anything in her coffee. While Julius might enjoy a cappuccino with dinner, he prefers his coffee black, and I knew he appreciated her telling him that she liked her coffee the same way. Julius put 2 cups of coffee on a tray and brought his prospective client to his office. After they were both seated in their seats, Julius watched as Omero finished her scone he had given her.
I was hungrier than I thought, she said. Thank you.
Understandable, Julius said. You spoke with my assistant, Archie Smith. Unfortunately, Archie has been erratic of late and only called me about this appointment seconds after you had rung my doorbell. I know nothing about your brother's murder, and I'll need you to tell me everything you know about it. Afterward, if I believe I can help you, I will do so. Let's start with where the murder occurred.
Manuel was shot in an alley off Avery Street. Omero's eyes moistened, and the muscles near her mouth bunched as her lips pressed into the hard line. Once she was able to compose herself, she added, "That's in the downtown area, near the old Lancaster Theater."
"Do you know why he was there?"
"No. The police said he must have been either buying or selling drugs."
She defiantly jutted out her chin.
"But that's not true. Manuel had two jobs. He worked hard. He didn't have anything to do with drugs."
Her voice softened to nearly a whisper as she added,
"Manuel was killed because of a prank. I'm sure of it."
The prank part piqued Julius's interest. As I knew it would, Julius asked her to elaborate.
"Someone offered my brother a lot of money to help him with a prank. Manuel told me about it a week before he was killed."
"Who was this person? What was the prank?"
"I don't know either of those, but 2 days before Manuel died, I saw him and he was angry. He told me he had done what he was supposed to do, but was being cheated."
Sandra O'Mara took an envelope and cell phone from her pocketbook and left her chair so she could walk around Julius's desk and hand these to him, which was something else I knew would endear her to him. He found it discourteous when someone reached across a desk or a table.
"Your assistant, Mr. Smith, asked I bring these to you," she said after she sat back down in the leather armchair across from Julius. "I'm afraid I don't know Manuel's passcode. I wrote down the other information Mr. Smith asked for."
Her expression softened.
"I was unable to get Manuel's banking records. I tried, but the bank will only release that to his next of kin, which is my mom. And she's too stubborn. She doesn't want me doing this, and she won't help. I tried." "Manuel didn't have much. Some books and clothes, old furniture, all of which has already been given away."
Julius first took a photo of Manuel Omero from the envelope. Then he picked up the phone and studied it. "If he hadn't unplugged me, so to speak, I would have told him that the cell phone was a new and expensive model, and that he wouldn't be able to unlock it with the photo of Manuel Omero, but instead would require a three-dimensional model of the dead man's face, which would be impossible to produce. When Julius tried Omero's birthday as a passcode and got a wrong code indication, I texted him that he had only 5 more guesses before the phone would lock up on him. And as good as I might be at hacking, I didn't have the special code the NSA has to unlock the phone, and that I had no chance of hacking the NSA's computer system to get it. Julius consented to read my text message, but otherwise showed no reaction. "It seems my assistant was once again derelict," Julius said, making no attempt to mask his peevishness. "He should have asked you about the details of your brother's employment."
"Manuel worked construction jobs when available. My brother was also a waiter at the Cheshire Restaurant in Cambridge."
The glint that flashed in Julius's eyes caused my processing cycles to speed up, which I knew from past experience was something akin to excitement. Julius asked that she excuse him for a moment as he turned to his laptop. When I saw what he was searching for, I couldn't help muttering to myself, "Son of a gun." I also made a note to myself to refine my neural network so that in the future I would make the same connection that Julius had regarding Manuel Omero's death on December 18th to him working as a waiter at the Cheshire restaurant. It was a relative breeze to hack the computer account that held Cheshire Restaurant's payroll information, and I texted Julius that his suspicions were correct. Not only was Manuel Omero working on the night of December 13th, but he was the waiter of record for the Hartley party. Julius finished reading the Boston Globe article he had searched for, then gave my text a quick glance. Sandra pulled absently on her right index finger as she watched him, which I took as a nervous gesture. "Did you find something?" she asked.
"Perhaps. Ms. O'Mara, what do you do for a living?"
"I work at an office for a medical lab. I've been saving for college, and so far I have saved $12,000, and I can pay you all of that to find Manuel's killer."
"No, that won't be necessary. I will charge you $1. While I can't guarantee results, I will try to see that justice is done for your brother."
Julius got back into his laptop, which was a signal for me to put together a contract, which I did, as well as sending it to Julius's office printer. After Julius had her sign it and she handed over $1, so he was now officially employed by her, he then escorted her to his front door and promised her he'd let her know as soon as he found something. Omero seemed stunned by this turn of events and thanked Julius profusely. Before turning away, she got on tiptoes and gave Julius a quick kiss on his cheek. When Julius returned to his office, he turned the speaker back on, and I told him that I had taken the liberty of hacking the Cambridge Police Department's computer system since Cheshire Restaurant was in Harvard Square. As the Boston Globe article you've read reported, Wayne Hartley and the rest of his dinner party dined in a private room. What the Globe didn't report is that they were playing poker at the time of Hartley's death. Autopsy report shows Hartley had suffered a fatal heart attack, and the toxicology report showed nothing. I thought you were onto something, but it looks like it was just a coincidence that Manuel Omero was their waiter and that Hartley's death had nothing to do with whatever prank Omero was hired to perform. If Julius was disappointed by this, he didn't show it. He asked, "Did you find crime scene photos?"
"None, but then again, it's been ruled a death from natural causes and not a crime."
"Huh," Julius said in a manner that implied he didn't quite agree with me. "Archie, call your friends in the media and see if any of them have photos or video of the poker table taken that night." None of these jackals were exactly friends, but I did as Julius requested and came up empty. Julius took the news in stride and asked me to call Mike Griff, the Boston detective assigned to Omero's death. When I got Griff on the phone, he asked me why I was calling, and I told him.
No, I got zip, Griff said. No witnesses have come forward, and there was no surveillance video near Avery Street that could help us. Why is Julius Katz interested?
He was hired by Omero's sister. Are you willing to talk to him?
Yeah, okay. But I'm sure we will only be wasting each other's time.
I gave Julius a quick rundown, then patched him in on the call. He asked Griff why he thought the murder was drug-related.
Well, the location of the murder and the time it occurred. Why do you think it was something else?
Well, I've been investigating this all of 1 minute, so nothing definitive. Do you know how Omero got to that alley? He didn't own a car, a taxi, or rideshare?
None that we found. I've been assuming he took the subway.
Avery Street is off of Washington Street. Were there any traffic surveillance videos showing the cars that passed within 5 minutes of the shooting? Griff's voice sounded raspier as he said,
Look, Julius, there are no traffic cameras on Washington Street, and I wasn't about to pull video from all of the downtown cameras for a drug deal gone bad. Do you have anything real, or are you just fishing? Well, at this point, it's a hunch. I'll let you know if it becomes more than that.
He sounds defensive, I told Julius, after he ended the call with Griff.
There's a traffic camera 3 blocks from the alley, but the video is only kept for 10 days, so we're out of luck there.
Julius made a face as if he'd sipped a fine Cabernet that had turned to vinegar. I assumed the reason was because of what his next obvious step would be, and he confirmed this when he asked me to call Detective Mark Kramer of the Cambridge Police Department, who would have been the one responsible for investigating Wayne Hartley's death. I patched Julius onto the call when Kramer picked up, because as much as Kramer disliked Julius, he disliked me more and would have disconnected the call before I got 2 words out.
"What do you want, Katz?"
Kramer barked without giving Julius a chance to speak.
"Professional courtesy. A case of mine intersects with Mr. Hartley's untimely death."
"There was nothing untimely about it. Hartley had a bad ticker, but Katz, I'll tell you what killed him. They were playing poker in their private dining room, and Hartley had just taken 2 cards and filled in a straight flush, and that's what triggered his heart attack."
"I played nice. Now it's your turn. Why are you interested in this?"
"Manuel Omero. He was murdered in the Boston alley 5 days after Hartley's death, and he was the waiter for the Hartley and his party."
"Yeah, that caught my eye. When that happened, I looked into it. There was no connection between Hartley and Omero, and besides, Hartley's toxicology report came back clean. No poisons, no drugs were in his system. If you have crime scene photos, I told you, it isn't a crime scene. I gave you more than you deserve, and I'll be darned if I break departmental rules to indulge whatever wild goose chase you're on."
And with that, Kramer ended the call. I said, "Kramer's churlishness was disappointing, but not surprising."
"Archie, I found what Kramer had to say enlightening. Please call Mary Omero and convince her to send me Manuel's banking records."
I tried, but the mother was every bit as stubborn as Sandra Omero had said. After I gave up, Julius tried calling her, but as far as she was concerned, she didn't approve of her daughter hiring Julius, and she refused to help, and Julius also gave up.
"Archie," Julius said, his exasperation showing, "I'll need you to put your considerable hacking skills to work and find me Manuel Omero's banking records. But first, call the surviving members of Hartley's poker game and arrange for me to meet with each of them individually." The poker game appeared to have been a team-building exercise, as all 5 players had worked for, or in one case, owned, Trafford Technologies. Wayne Hartley had been their chief financial officer, Carl Trafford, CEO and owner, Sam Dion, vice president of sales, Bill Warren, Northeast sales director, and Henry Barrington, senior sales representative. I tried Trafford first, thinking if I had him on board, the others would be easy, but he wasn't receptive to my pitch, and instead demanded to know why Katz wanted to speak to him.
"Well, as I told you, your waiter at Cheshire's was murdered 5 days after your ill-fated poker game."
"I don't see what that has to do with anything."
Julius sees a connection.
"Yeah, well, he can see little green men dancing the polka with Bigfoot for all I care. Wayne's death was tragic, but it was a heart attack, nothing more. And I don't have time to satisfy some publicity-seeking detective's whims."
He hung up on me then. I reported verbatim my conversation to Julius.
"Well, I better call him," Julius said. I dialed Trafford's cell number and patched Julius into the call. Trafford, thinking it was me calling back, unleashed a string of extremely unkind invectives.
"How'd you get my private number?" he demanded.
"This is Julius Katz. My assistant, Archie Smith, can be resourceful when he wants to be. I don't want to take too much of your time, but I have a few questions I'd like to ask you." You've already taken more of my time than I'm willing to give you.
Trafford then hung up on Julius. I asked, could Kramer have called him and told him not to talk to you?
I don't know, Archie. All I can say for certain is that was most unsatisfactory.
I better try calling the other members of the poker game, although I doubt I'll have better luck.
Because Trafford will be ordering them not to talk to you?
Presumably.
That turned out to be the case with Dion and Barrington. Bill Warren, though, seemed curious about the call.
I was told not to talk to you, he said, although that's not precisely true. The order came through as an email.
I surmised as much. Do you know why?
If I had to guess, I'd say Trafford's afraid of bad publicity, but it's also possible that he's trying to protect Wayne's memory. He was close to Wayne, and I know he took Wayne's death hard, and I'm sure he wouldn't want you or anyone else dredging up anything unpleasant about him.
Well, that's not my intention.
I wouldn't think so. I have to admit, I'm a bit of a fan. I've been reading the cases that your assistant Archie Smith writes up for the magazine, and I'm not about to let Trafford's paranoia keep me from meeting you, especially if it can help you with a case.
He made a soft humming noise, something he probably did as he went through his schedule.
I have meetings until 3, but I can be at your Beacon Hill townhouse by 4 if you're willing to serve up the same platter you did in the Willerford case, along with a nice Malbec.
From the blank expression on Julius's face, he had no idea what he had served to a witness when he was investigating Harriet Willerford's murder. And since I couldn't talk to him privately because he had my transmitter plugged into the speaker, I texted him the combination of cured meats and cheeses that he had used then. He gave my text a cursory glance and told Warren that that could be arranged.
At least you didn't get shut out entirely, I told Julius after he got off the phone with Warren.
Since he's in actuality more of a fan of my writing than of yourself, I'm sure if I had called, he would have just as readily agreed to the meeting.
Julius ignored my dig. He said, Archie, where are you in obtaining Omero's banking records?
Well, so far, nowhere. I'm trying to poke holes in the bank's security system, but they seem to have it bottled up tight. I'll keep trying.
Do that. Julius picked up his book on French cheeses and tried to pick up where he'd left off, but 3 minutes and 10 seconds later he put the book down and started drumming the surface of his antique walnut desk with the fingers on his right hand. After 18.1 seconds of finger drumming, Julius moved the transmitter from the speaker to his right ear, abruptly stood up and headed to the kitchen. Once there, he appeared to be making an inventory of the cured meats and cheeses in his refrigerator. I told him he was missing mortadella, but he could replace it with some of the Fellino salami he recently bought. He didn't bother telling me whether we'd be doing that, and instead headed to his wine cellar where he picked out a highly rated Malbec that promised hints of cassis, blueberries, and violets. He brought the wine to the kitchen, then stood for 23.7 seconds, drumming his finger on his right hand against the granite countertop. It's one thing to investigate a murder with one hand tied behind one's back, he grumbled unhappily. It's quite something else to do it with both hands tied. Archie, you do realize that if you hadn't pestered me this morning, I'd be spending an enjoyable day doing exactly what I wanted to do.
Well, yes, boss, I said, realizing that any smart comment on my part carried the risk of being turned off.
I'll be up in my studio. Text me when you have those bank records.
Julius removed me from his tie and left me and the transmitter on the kitchen countertop next to the Malbec. The top level of his townhouse had been converted into a martial arts workout space, and he spent every morning from 6:45 until 8:45 engaged in intensive practice, building on the 5th degree black belt he holds in
Huang Ga Kung Fu. Since I'd been with him, he'd never once found the need to do any additional workout during the day. I'd had enough literature added to my knowledge base to understand the reason for this. He was frustrated and was having a hard time standing still. This was surprising behavior from Julius, but I guess there was a first time for everything. There were no webcam feeds on the top or second levels of Julius's townhouse, but at precisely 3:30, Julius entered the first floor hallway. He appeared freshly showered, and after he entered the kitchen, he attached me to his tie and the transmitter to his ear.
"Still no bank records?" he asked.
"They have those locked up, but their email server isn't nearly as secure. I modified an email one of the employees sent to several of his co-workers, adding a back door to an actual link. If any of them click on it, I'm in. So, for now, I just have to wait."
Julius made a face to show what he thought of this, but he held back any comment he might have wanted to make and instead went about putting together a platter of cured meats, crackers, and cheeses for himself and Bill Warren. Since Warren was a fan of my write-ups of Julius' cases, all of which made with the necessary editorial changes to hide my true nature, he knew how Julius felt about punctuality, and I spotted him over the outdoor webcam walking up the brick pathway at precisely 1 minute to four. He rang the doorbell 30 seconds later. Stating the obvious, I told Julius, "The only member of Trafford's Technologies willing to talk to you is at the door." Again, Julius ignored me and got up from behind his desk so he could meet Warren. At 44, Warren was 4 years older than Julius. According to his driver's license, he was 3 inches shorter than Julius's 6 feet and 18 pounds heavier than Julius's 180 pounds. The little fringe of hair he had was the color of cigar ash, while Julius's hair was mostly jet black, with only a smidgen of gray at his temples. Just as Warren knew to arrive on time, he also knew better than to offer Julius his hand. He showed a self-satisfied smirk and said, "My wife will be so jealous when I tell her about this. Will Archie Smith be joining us?" Julius, still annoyed at me for ruining his day and not yet cracking the bank security system, couldn't resist saying, "No, he's detained elsewhere where he is in no doubt being a nuisance." Julius led Warren back to his office where the platter of cold cuts and the bottle of Malbec were waiting. After pouring glasses for himself and Warren, he handed Warren a plate and waited until after Warren took his turn with the platter before adding cured meats, cheeses, and crackers to his own plate, which he would have done even if he hadn't skipped lunch. At first, Julius allowed Warren to enjoy his late afternoon snack, only seemingly engaging in small talk while in fact using the small talk to get a measure on Warren. After 8 minutes and 10 seconds of this, he placed Manuel Omero's photo on his desk. Julius said, "Do you know this man?" Warren picked up the photo and studied it for 9.3 seconds before putting it back on the desk and telling Julius he didn't recognize the person. "His name is Manuel Omero. He was your waiter at Cheshire's the night Wayne Hartley died." Wayne picked up the photo again and frowned as he gave it another look. "Okay, I remember him now. A very cute blonde waitress brought us our first round of drinks, and she was the one who caught my attention. In fact, I was planning to seek her out later, but Wayne's inadvertent death changed that. What does this man have to do with Wayne?" "Well, I'll get to that later. There were 5 of you playing poker at Cheshire's that night." "You know about that?" Warren said, his lips twisting into a hard smile. "Well, I guess I shouldn't be surprised by that." "Yeah, there were 5 of us. The newspapers got that part right. I suppose you know who all of us were that night, otherwise you wouldn't have called me." "Correct."
"Was the poker game a one-time affair?"
"No.
We have a game every quarter. We euphemistically call it a team-building exercise, but it isn't a penny-ante game. It has a 5 grand buy-in. He raised an eyebrow. Did you hear about the hand that killed Wayne?
He drew 2 cards into a straight flush.
Yep. We were playing 5-card draw, and he picked up 2 cards, giving him a 9-high straight flush in hearts. A second later, he clutched his chest and died like... Warren snapped his fingers, then added, losing out on what would have been a monster pot and certainly the best hand he'd ever seen.
Your tone regarding Hartley's untimely death seems exceptionally flippant.
You didn't like the man?
You said that more as a statement than a question, Warren noted.
I didn't have much feelings about Wayne one way or the other. We worked at the same company, but I had little to do with him other than being in the same poker game with him every 3 months. So he died, and I felt sorry for him and his family for a day or so, and then it was time to move on. That's the way life is. If I find some ironic humor in how he died, so be it. To be honest, what hit me the most about Wayne's death was how it impacted the company.
Delaying an initial public offering, Warren's smile turned grim.
I can't confirm or deny the rumors that have been floating around, nor can I confirm or deny the rumor that we might finally be back on track for an IPO.
I'd like to walk through the events of that night. The report I've seen has time of death occurring at roughly 8:15.
When did the game start?
7:30.
Was food served?
We'd ordered, but Wayne died before it arrived. We had time, though, to order 2 rounds of drinks before he made his grand exit.
Warren's eyes took on a faraway look, as if he were trying to pull something from his memory.
The second round had just arrived before Wayne pulled his straight flush. Sam Dion was dealing. That's easy for me to remember because I rub it in every chance I get that he's the one who killed Wayne.
Wayne had waited until the waiter left the room before picking up the 2 cards he'd asked for. I remember that as clearly as if it had just happened.
Did anyone touch their second drinks?
I think Wayne took a few sips of his before picking up his cards. I didn't touch mine, I can't say about anyone else.
When Hartley had his heart attack, did he pitch forward or slump back in his chair?
Well, that's a strange question, Warren said.
He slumped back.
Were any drinks knocked over?
That's an even stranger question. His eyes took on that faraway look again as he dredged deeper into his memory, or at least tried to give that impression.
I think one of the drinks had been knocked over. I have a vague impression of touching a wet tablecloth.
Do you know whose?
Nah, sorry, no.
What does any of this have to do with our waiter that night?
He's saying that innocently enough, I commented to Julius. Maybe he really is clueless.
Julius again ignored me.
Manuel Omero was murdered 5 days after Hartley's death.
Warren dropped his smile then.
He also blinked 3 times in rapid succession.
Are you saying that the waiter's death and Wayne's are connected?
We've been told that Wayne died of natural causes. Are you suggesting that he was poisoned by this Omero?
Oh, no, I'm not suggesting that, nor am I disputing the cause of Hartley's death. I'm simply trying to get as complete a picture as I can of what transpired that evening.
Wayne got to his feet.
You know, I made a mistake in coming here, he said, half under his breath.
He moved quickly to leave Julius's office. I watched over the hallway webcam feed to make sure he left without incident.
He's out of your home and making a beeline up your brick walkway, I told Julius.
Was all that an act, or did he genuinely not recognize Omero's photo when he first looked at it?
And was he really surprised to hear about Omero's being killed?
I couldn't tell you, Julius concluded.
You needed to know that they'd been served two drinks and that one of the glasses might have been knocked over?
It would have been helpful more to know whose glass was knocked over, Julius said somewhat whimsically.
Kramer could have made this so much easier for me, but it's not in his nature. Archie, see if you can find banking and credit card accounts for the surviving members of the poker game and look for any unusual spending patterns.
I'm leaving for dinner.
Julius entered the office promptly at 9:10 the next morning. I waited until he fitted me onto his tie and plugged the transmitter into the speaker before reporting on what I had, which wasn't much. The back door to get me Amaro's bank records hadn't been opened yet, and while I was able to find credit card and bank accounts for all four of the surviving poker players, I was only able to hack into the credit card accounts and two of the bank accounts. I've set up the same sort of back doors for the other two banks I did for Amaro's, and hopefully one of those will spring open soon. So far I've found nothing suspicious. I've also hacked their phone records, and none of them had called Amaro. The only potential good news I have is that a package was left at your doorstep at 8:10. From its size, I suspect it's a bottle of wine.
Julius made a noise and headed out to retrieve the package, which he brought back into his office. There was a card attached which read,
I thought of you when I saw this bottle of Chateau Latour 1983. Many thanks again for pulling my chestnuts out of the fire, Jack Horowitz. He retrieved from his desk a switchblade he once took off of a murderer and sliced the box open. Something about the note was causing a prickly sensation in my processing cycles, and as Julius was opening the box, I realized what it was. I'd seen Horowitz's signature before, and what was on the card wasn't it.
Get away from the box!
My warning froze Julius enough to keep him from sticking his hand inside the box. I think I saw the snake a split second before Julius did. In any case, I yelled, Snake! Just before the darn thing sprung at him. Julius has lightning-fast reflexes that had been honed by 2 decades of martial art practice, and that was the only reason he caught the snake right under its head and kept it from sinking its fangs into him. Just as quickly as Julius had snatched the snake out of the air, he drove the snake's face into the desk and, using a marble paperweight, killed the thing. Julius asked, How did you know to warn me about the package?
The signature on the note. I realized it didn't match Horowitz's.
Warren would have read about Jack Horowitz and what you did for him.
Did he send this package?
I don't know. One of the four did. I asked, Should I call Mike Griff?
First call Kramer. Tell him that thanks to his obstinacy, someone tried to kill me this morning and almost succeeded, then put me on.
I did as Julius requested and patched him in the moment Kramer began belligerently berating me, telling me I was full of it.
What Archie told you was not an exaggeration, Julius said. Right now he is putting together an email with an attachment showing the webcam feed from my office of what happened, which could have been avoided if you had shown me the crime scene photos I had requested.
I did as Julius said, sending Kramer a video attachment that showed Julius opening the box and the snake springing at him, and 9.2 seconds later, Kramer yelled out an expletive which must have been when the snake made its appearance.
Kramer asked, Is that thing poisonous?
A black mamba, one of the most poisonous in the world.
Are you saying one of the other poker players had Omero's poison hardly, and then killed O'Mara to keep him quiet? Because if that's what you're thinking, our coroner would beg to differ.
I don't believe I said that. If you bring me those crime scene photos, I'll tell you what happened.
Kramer wasn't exactly contrite, but 18 minutes and 7 seconds later, he arrived at Julius's townhouse with an envelope holding the crime scene photos.
Julius had left the dead snake on his desk, and Kramer poked at it with his finger. Once he was satisfied it wasn't a prop, he handed over the 3 crime scene photos. The photos were taken from different angles, and each of them showed Hartley slumped backward in his chair and the glass in front of him knocked over. Given that it was a lowball glass and it had an orange twist and cherry in it, Hartley must have ordered an old-fashioned.
None of the other drinks had been knocked over.
"These are copies," Kramer said. "You can keep them for all the good they'll do you."
"They don't point to which of the four murdered Manuel Romero and tried to murder me, but they validate the theory I've been working on." Julius told Kramer his theory, and it was one I hadn't thought of, but it was the only thing that made sense. Kramer reluctantly acknowledged that he thought it made sense also. Grimacing, he said,
It sounds like this is a matter for the Boston police."
"For now, yes. That might change. If it does, I'll let you know." After Kramer left, I told Julius that the back door to Manuel Romero's bank account had been opened. What I found interesting was on August 4th of last year, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts deposited $3,122 into his account. 3 days later, he wrote a check for the expensive cell phone that you're now in possession of. Archie, please see if within a month of that deposit, any Massachusetts daily lottery games paid that amount. I did as Julius requested, and I found a lottery game that paid exactly that. I gave Julius the four-digit winning numbers, and Julius tried those numbers as the cell phone passcode, which successfully unlocked the phone. It didn't take Julius long after that to find a photo showing a vial holding white powder being poured into a Manhattan cocktail. The date and time of the photo showed it was taken only 4 minutes before Hartley's death. I said, "Romero knew he was poisoning someone there." "Perhaps. More likely he was told the substance was something other than what it was. Archie called Carl Trafford and tell him that one of the four surviving players in the December 18th poker game is a murderer and the other is an intended victim. Let him know that the consequence will be dire if he and the other three do not arrive at my townhouse today at precisely 1 p.m. Carl Trafford and the three other players from the fateful poker game arrived as a group at 1:02, and none of them looked particularly happy. Trafford, in particular, appeared to be seething as he accused Julius of trying to extort him and his company. He stopped abruptly when he stepped into Julius's office and saw the dead snake that was still on Julius's desk and the crime scene photos. Trafford, with his voice sounding a bit strangled, asked, "What is that?" "A snake," Julius said sharply. He directed Trafford to take the seat of honor in the armchair directly facing the desk. Bill Warren and Sam Dion onto the sofa and Harry Barrington onto the love seat. Once he was seated behind the desk, he addressed Trafford, saying, "One of you is a murderer who panicked when learning that I was investigating Manuel Romero's death, and this morning sent me that black mamba in a package which promised a bottle of 83 Chateau Latour. As you can see, I proved to be a hair faster than the snake. If I hadn't, I'd be dead by now. So here's your choice. You can hire me or not to uncover which of you is the murderer. If you hire me, I will do so expeditiously. I find it hard to believe that someone who acted as rashly as this person did in sending me that package would be able to sit here for more than an hour without me discovering him. If you don't wish me to hire me, fine. I will then give the Boston police everything I have, and they will eventually uncover this miscreant. It could take them weeks or longer, and it could put your company front and center in the news for that length of time, which carries the risk of scuttling any plans you have for an IPO. But eventually, they'll find the culprit, and maybe during this time the miscreant will finally kill whom he wanted to kill, because that black mamba wasn't acquired for me, but for one of you." Trafford asked, "What do you want?" "A $25,000 retainer, an additional $25,000 on the culprit's arrest, and $50,000 on his indictment." Trafford gave the matter all of 5 seconds of consideration before agreeing to Julius's terms. "One of you arranged for your waiter that night, Manuel Romero, to dose one of the drinks with a white powder. Romero was led to believe that this was a prank. Hartley's death was a coincidence. His drink was not dosed, but the culprit was convinced that Romero had made a mistake. Hartley's drink being knocked over was not an accident. You don't accidentally knock over a lowball glass. The culprit did that because he believed the police would find potassium chloride in the drink.
The culprit at first refused to pay O'Mara what he had promised, thinking that O'Mara had ruined the plan in the worst possible way, and when O'Mara put pressure on him, he arranged to meet O'Mara in the Boston alley where he shot O'Mara to death. This same person then spent weeks, maybe longer, acquiring a black mamba with the intention of turning it loose on whom he wanted dead, but before he could use the snake for that purpose, he saw the necessity of using it on me instead. Trafford asked, "Other than the snake, do you have the tangible proof of any of this, or is this all conjecture?" Julius took Omero's phone from the desk drawer, unlocked it, and showed them the photo of a white powder being poured into a Manhattan cocktail. The crime scene photo showed two Manhattans were served. Julius said, "Which of you ordered them?" Dion and Trafford both looked uncomfortable as they raised their hands. Julius said, "So one of you was the intended victim." Barrington was glaring at Warren. "I saw you knock over Wayne's glass," he said. "I thought it was funny at the time." Warren's skin color had dropped a shade. "Oh, now that's a lie." "It might be, it might not," Julius said. Manuel O'Mara had been working for Cheshire's for over 2 years, and yet he didn't know the name of the person who had hired him. I know this from the angry message he had texted this person when he was believed he was being cheated. "I've been trying to reconcile Omero's not knowing the killer's name with you holding your quarterly poker game at Cheshire's, and the only way I can do that is by assuming that this was the first game you had there." "That's right," Trafford said. "Until last quarter, we'd been having the game at my house." He looked at Barrington, an odd expression muddling his face. "Henry was the one who suggested we move the game there. He made the arrangements." Julius said, "We now know who the murderer is. Is there a reason why Barrington would want either of you dead?" Trafford shook his head. Dion showed a guilty smile. "Yeah, I've been having an affair with Henry's wife," Dion said. "I'd meet up with Suzanne every time I'd send Henry on a sales trip."
"I had no idea," Barrington said, but the hitch alongside his mouth was a clear giveaway.
Julius signaled me to call Detective Mike Griff, who was waiting in the kitchen. When Griff entered the office shortly after that, Julius introduced him to his guests. He pointed out Henry Barrington as Manuel O'Mara's killer.
"That's preposterous," Barrington said,
but once again his nervous hitch showed up. I saw it, Julius saw it, and Griff saw it.
I'd like to play you the outdoor webcam feed again," Julius told Griff. "Now that I see Barrington up close, I believe he was the man who delivered the package.
Your video forensics unit should be able to prove it." Julius got on his laptop and typed, "Archie, play the video." I did as he requested, and the video showed the man who had delivered the booby-trapped package. He had long blonde hair, a bushy mustache and beard, wore dark glasses, and had on an overnight delivery uniform. Julius knew just enough to be able to pause the video, and he did so when it showed the clearest view of the person. While Barrington had short dark hair and was clean-shaven, he had the same nose and angular face as the man in the video.
"Yeah, I think that's him," Griff said, staring hard at Barrington, who seemed to wilt under it. "It's enough for me to arrest him and get search warrants."
"He's married," Julius said. "It would be hard for him to keep a poisonous snake in his house without his wife becoming suspicious. It's a good bet he has a second apartment. If he does, and you find it, you might find the gun he used to kill O'Mara, also the overnight delivery uniform and evidence that he had a snake delivered." Julius was right about Barrington keeping a secret apartment. It took Griff and the Boston police only 2 days to find it, and it had all the incriminating evidence Julius had guessed it would have. 3 days later, Barrington was indicted. 2 days after that, I found a case of 1982 Chateau Latour for sale. The good stuff, not the lesser vintage. And Julius gave me instructions to purchase it. It took a hefty bite out of what we would have left after taxes from the $100,000 Carl Trafford had paid him, but it would still leave him with enough to dine once a week at Le Chez Cru for a year. The case of wine arrived late Thursday morning while Julius sat in his office reading a newly published biography of Benjamin Franklin. After he brought the crate inside, I asked whether he should have it x-rayed for snakes before opening it. No, that won't be necessary, Archie. Julius opened the crate to find only the 12 bottles of the expected wine. No snakes or poisonous spiders or anything else was hidden inside. A quick examination showed that none of the bottles were broken. I said, "So it wasn't that bad a move on my part to bring Sandra O'Meara in?" Julius was holding one of the bottles up to the light so he could examine it more closely. "There may have been a few bumps along the way," Julius said, a thin smile cracking what had been a deadpan expression. "But in the end, it turned out quite satisfactory." Well, folks, just one story today. I am out of time. This is Keith Tyler saying thanks again for tuning into the Mystery Hour here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. And join me again next time, would you please? Thanks. Make sure your I love yous are in order. So long.